Welcome to the Euro Auto Training Garage Spiel Podcast. Garage Spiel Podcasts are brought to you by your friends at Baum Tools Unlimited and Stallwilly Tools North America. Learn more at www.baumtools.com and www.stallwilly.com. Baum Tools Unlimited and Stallwilly Tools North America are proud to underwrite the Garage Spiel Podcasts. This is part four of our eight-part interview with Dennis Simonitis, Road & Track Magazine's engineering editor. In this episode, Dennis talks about the origins of hybrid vehicles and why the Japanese got a head start with automotive hybrid technology. Toyota's Prius seemed to come out of nowhere and help spark what appears to be a revolution in the auto industry, where nearly all the automakers now, and maybe all the automakers, are playing catch-up a little bit. Particularly the Germans.
Yeah.
Do you agree? And if you do, why do you think that is?
Yeah, I would agree. With all due respect to our European pals, and still honoring the memories of Nicholas Otto and Rudolf Diesel and all those other guys, the Europeans don't always think of everything first. In fact, let's see, neither did Toyota be alone in this. In the, mid-90s, they and Honda both developed viable hybrids. And they, in fact, I think as far as who came to the U.S. first, it was like a month or 3 months difference. I think the Honda Insight beat the Toyota Prius. Not that it mattered, but they were both around year 2000 model year. Maybe it was, around 2000. Because I remember we tested a Prius, first generation Prius, and the original Insight, not to be confused with the current Insight, we took them off on the trips at the same time and learned their advantages and disadvantages. They're quite different as hybrids, but quite different in terms of their technology. But they are both, in fact, real, honest-to-God hybrids. In any case, yes, the Japanese were first. How come? Well, I think it has to do with what the motive is. It has to do with what is it you're trying to optimize? And the Japanese were trying to optimize both clean air as well as fuel consumption. Let's draw back, because this is, again, without intending a slam on our European pals. Despite what you might hear from time to time, it wasn't in Europe that the idea of catalytic converters were invented. It wasn't in Europe where clean air was considered a good thing. This is all pre-CO2. This is back when we were involved, as we still are, with what are called the criteria pollutants. Hydrocarbons, unburned hydrocarbons. Carbon monoxide, that poisonous stuff that can kill you. And NOx, NOx, and oxides of nitrogen. So those are the three bad guys. They were identified in the United States, and particularly here in California, in the early mid-70s, as being, among other things, as being where smog comes from. And it was initially kind of a Southern California problem, because Los Angeles is highly automotive. Los Angeles has this ring of mountains around it, and it has winds that tend to come off the water. And therefore, I'm told in the old days, the Indians called it the Valley of a Thousand Smokes. Yeah, they had that right. And it was not a real good place to put a hydrocarbon economy, but here it is. It's already here. Okay, so in any case, in the early 70s, probably late 60s, if you figure on how long it takes research to percolate, a lot of researchers identified these three pollutants. And they identified the automobile as being a real culprit.
One of the culprits.
One of the culprits.
Sure.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. But one they could go after. And along in 76 came the development of the catalytic converter. And one of several ways, in the mid-late 70s and early 80s, there was a transition going on of what is the best way to handle emission controls. Should you use some sort of chemical gizmo on the car, catalytic converter? Should you run the car with some sort of odd approach with a thermal reactor or something like that? A lot of experimenting going on, some of it more successful, some of it less successful than others. In any event, this was all in the U.S. and to some extent in Japan, and curiously enough, to some extent in Sweden. There was a time when Sweden was the only European country that gave a diddly-boo about clean air. And the rest of the Europeans, forgive me, friends, the Germans, were sniffing and saying, oh, you people are overreacting. There's no reason to worry about this. Is you make the car run cleanly, it's fine. You just make the car run properly, and it's running efficiently. It was the United States and Japan, and as I said, curiously enough, Sweden, where they set standards for HC, CO, and NOx. And along came the catalytic converter with a lot of disruptive technology. Notice, previously to the catalytic converter, fuels could raise their octane by virtue of putting in tetraethyl lead. But lead was and is a poison to the catalyst of a catalytic converter. So if you're going to have a converter on a car, you cannot use leaded fuel. And therefore, we had to completely change our fuel infrastructure and get rid of the lead. It's a pretty complicated thing to do. You know, there was economic aspects of it and so on. And for a long time, the Europeans didn't do this. Now, I don't mean to make them sound the bad guys. They were dealing with one side of the issue, namely fuel consumption.
Yep.
And they always have. More than we have, to be completely honest.
Mm-hmm.
So they fostered smaller cars, more efficient cars. By the way, Road and Track is and then was enamored of these smaller, more efficient cars.
Sure, yeah.
Why? Because of fuel consumption. They were less concerned with clean air. Okay, in the meantime, half a world away, Japan, being a tight little island with lots of automotive density, they wanted to worry not only about fuel consumption, but also clean air. And there are several reasons why a hybrid is one way to approach that. The main reason is the interactivity of the heat engine, the gasoline engine, or diesel, or CNG, whatever. The interaction of the heat engine with the electric motor allows you to optimize the performance of each. And under certain conditions, you can use the motor for most of your work. Under other conditions, you can use the engine for most of your work. It allows you to make a smaller engine propel a vehicle with the electric assistance than you could have otherwise. And allows you to run this gasoline engine in a regime that makes it particularly clean. So the Japanese and us, but particularly the Japanese first, they were working both sides of fuel economy as well as clean air. And the hybrid was one of the good ideas that was fostered thereby. Oh, another point about the hybrid that's so cool. Once you have that battery on board, which you're going to have for the healthy interactions, then you have some place to put the energy of braking. Rather than just heating up the brakes and throwing off that energy to the atmosphere, you can do what's called, of course, regenerative braking. That is, taking some of that energy and pushing it back into the battery by virtue of running the motor backwards as a generator. Boy, that's an oversimplification. I'm sure automotive engineers put their eyes roll back when they hear me say that. I'm sure it's a lot more complicated than that. In any case, you run the motor backwards, you know, Charlie F. Murphy and all that stuff. So regen braking is another real advantage of the hybrid. It has some disadvantages, by the way. One disadvantage is you're carrying around those two propulsion sources. You're carrying around the electric motor and its heavy battery and the gasoline engine and its fuel tank. So you're kind of doubling the cost, increasing the weight. So early on, there were some people who said, God, you know, a hybrid is not a very good idea because of this duplication of power source. And the Europeans, being interested in fuel economy and caring less about clean air, said, no, the hybrid's not a good idea. It doesn't pencil out for fuel economy. To some extent, they're right. But, of course, they were ignoring at that time. This is where, you know, we're talking now mid-70s, 80s. They were less interested in the clean air aspects. And we, in Japan, were more interested in it. So, okay, so here comes the mid-90s, late 90s, where Japan, I think about 3 years before we did, introduced the Honda Insight and the Toyota Prius. And then around the year 2000, they both come to the U.S. I guess the Prius, first-generation Prius, took off a bit more than the Insight. The Insight of that, I remember, was a two-seater. and was a little more extreme in its, not in its engineering. If anything, the Prius was a more complex car from a hybrid point of view, but the Insight was a little bit more extreme car, simply being a two-seater, than was the Prius. Prius being a four-door, four-seater.
Maybe in its styling also.
Also in its styling. Yeah, remember it had the side skirts?
Side skirts on the rear wheels.
Yes, indeed.
Right.
Yeah. So it was a, it was an acquired taste. By the way, they're collectible as can be now.
I'm sure.
First-generation Insights. And for that matter, so are first-generation Priuses. In any case, the Prius took off. And then it's been through now, what, three generations? And now with the new, brand new Prius V, which is an upsized standard Prius, they're expanding the Prius family into not just one Prius, but a whole family of some Prii. Some people go, ugh, there. But I'll buy into it, Prii, plural of Prius. So, okay, so what happened with the Germans? Well, remember, for a long time, they didn't care about clean air nearly as much as we did. Then along comes CO2, which, depending on where you stand politically, it's stuff I breathe out, but it's also stuff that may be involved with global warming, and therefore let us worry about CO2.
Be sure to check out the rest of our interview with Dennis at www.euroautotraining.com.